pets are such a wonderful part of our life, aren't they? Cheer us up, stay by our side, give us that wonderful unconditional love. Life just wouldn't be the same without them. And we're lucky that Dr. Sandy Sawchuk of the UW School of Veterinary Medicine takes time every month to spend some time with us and give her advice on how to keep your pet and mine healthy and happy. And Sandy, great to have you back.
Nice to be back on this cold day.
Yeah, really cold day. You know, I'm wondering about that with our animals. You know, the dogs have to go out and go for a run.
I know. Well, sometimes you have to change what you do exercise-wise. You know, most dogs, even though they make those booties and things, they don't want to wear them.
They don't want them.
You know, just some cautions in the winter. Always make sure your dog's on a leash. They can't, if they get away, they may go out on water or ice, I should say. And we out every year, dogs fall through the ice. Not that it's probably open water right now, but it can be. We run into a lot of foot irritation from the salt products that are used too. So washing your pet's feet when you come back in, really important. They do make pet safe salt. But that's, even if they ingest it, it can make them sick. It can upset their tummy.
Okay.
But it's just not irritating. You know, some dogs like to wear little jackets, but you really have to know your dog. If you've got a big, hairy northern breed, they may be able to spend more time outside than perhaps like my elderly bulldogs who went out, and I have never seen them go to the bathroom that fast and back in again. So, and that's fine. But, you know, just because it's cold outside, if they're being couch potatoes, make sure you're cutting back on the food. We see a lot of dogs put a lot of weight on in the winter. So you don't want to be having them overeating if they're just going to be laying around on the couch.
Lots of callers already starting online. If you'd like to join in, by the way, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Have a question about your pet? Got a photo? You can also send it to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We always love the photos that we get when Dr. Sandy's on the show. Cecilia in Manitowoc has a question for you. So let's go to her. Hi, Cecilia.
Hi there. I'm wondering if Dr. Sandy could discuss the pros and cons of declawing cats. As we speak, probably my cat is being declawed and I'm feeling very guilty.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those kind of controversial issues. And in some parts of the world, it is illegal to do it unless there's a medical reason for it. The pros, obviously, are your cat can't cause any damage. They can still cause damage with their back claws. And I always recommend leaving the back claws if possible. At least with that, cats, if they did get escape, they could, you know, potentially still climb a tree or something like that. But the cons are it's a general anesthetic procedure. And often we will pair it with a spay or a neuter when we're doing it when they're young. And there's always that risk when any time you're doing surgery of infection, anesthetic risk problems, poor healing. I mean, things can go wrong, although the majority, a great majority of cats that are declawed just bounce right back and are back to totally being normal again. Currently, my two cats that I have right now are not declawed, and I just got a new carpet in my area rug in my kitchen. And guess what? My cat is destroying it. And so I'm looking at this 11-year-old cat and going, okay, you don't want me to trim your toenails. You put up a fight for that. What am I going to do? And, you know, I think, and not that I'm probably going to declaw her, but even in an older cat, if you're doing it with like a laser surgery, they tend to bounce back pretty quick. And it's, you know, again, you know, a procedure that you really want to think about and do if necessary. I know, Larry, your cats are declawed, but you got them when you had a young child and, you know, they're totally indoors and, you know.
They never get out.
They never get out, but they, you know, and they're perfect and they have, you know, no issues. People will say with, you know, you'll read online people that are against declawing that you'll have all these behavior problems. They'll bite more and so on. And none of that has ever been substantiated when you look at research. So, yep, the worst thing can happen is failure to use the litter box when you go home because you're usually instructed to get rid of the cat litter for a few days and substitute something like shredded paper or the pelletized, like yesterday's news, like the pelletized newspaper. Mm-hmm. And some cats don't like that. So that can sometimes be the problem.
There you go.
Well, So, thank you very much.
Don't feel bad.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Cecilia. Susie and Toma, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my phone call. I have a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. I'm looking at him right now, and he snores. He sleeps with my husband and me at night, and he really wakes us up, and we don't know what to do. We want him to stay with us, and we're wondering if he might have an allergy problem or something that can be take care of that snoring.
Did this just start right away, or is it's been going on for most of his life?
He's 3 years old, and I would say for the past 6 months or so, he is about 2 pounds overweight.
That may be the problem, because that was the next thing out of my mouth was, is he carrying any extra weight? Well, people that listen to the show know that I have English Bulldogs, and their snoring will shake the rafters. Oh, my goodness. They are so loud, and I've just learned to you know, live through it. But it's all because of anatomy. Even Cavaliers, they have such a short snout. They probably, you know, your dog probably has a little bit of an elongated soft palate. And, you know, and just the positioning that they're in, they've got some looser tissue back there, especially if they're overweight, that's going to add to it. So you could try a couple things to try. I've found that with my dogs, if I give them something to rest their head on, a pillow, or they make dog beds that have kind of a bolster around the edge of it that's pretty sturdy, if you can get them to sleep with their head propped up like that, sometimes that will help with the snoring. Get the extra weight off, definitely. And then also make sure that there isn't anything else going on, like enlarged tonsils, if your dog has dental disease or anything like that, which could potentially, you know, cause some tissue issues back in the back of the throat there and make the breathing worse. But unfortunately, I think it's just probably one of those things. So get some earplugs.
It's pretty bad. Okay.
All right, Susie. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Gene and Beaver Dam. Hi.
Hi. I got a cat that we got from the shelter with two other cats that we had at the house. And when we put feed down, it just gorges itself and eats the whole dish up, and then gets himself sick.
Yeah.
How do you take care of that?
Well, you know, this is very common in cats that may have missed a few meals. So if he was a stray and maybe had to hunt for a living, you know, I call it the, like, living through the depression type thing. Like, my former mother-in-law used to, like, buy, like, tons of food. And it's like, well, who's going to eat all this? But, you know, she had closets full of food. And it's kind of the same type of mentality with these guys. It's like, I better eat now because I may not have a meal tomorrow, even though they know, or you know, that you're going to always have food down for them. Some things that you could try. One would be to try to slow him down when it comes to eating. Either putting the food on a cookie sheet, spreading it out so he has to kind of walk around buffet style. A muffin tin works great. And they even if you just like go online and look up interactive food bowls for cats. They have these new devices, and I've seen them at the local pet stores, that are kind of a souped-up muffin tin. They've got little tubes that you put the food in. The cat has to learn to reach their foot down in and pull the food out. It starts out with very little short cylinders, and you gradually, as they learn, make it longer and longer so that he has to work for a living. They even make toys that dispense food, and I had one student actually design a treat stick. She used a piece of PVC pipe and put some caps on it, drilled some holes in it that are big enough for the food to fall out, and the cat had to bat this around to get the food to come out. You could also try like one of those automatic feeders that periodically you can just have it get to, you know, go off every 8 hours or so, have a little bit of food there for him. But yeah, it's a matter of just getting him to slow down, and hopefully once he adjusts to your household, things will, you know, be better and he's not going to be such a pig.
Yeah, we've had him now for 2 or 3 months, and he still, you know, we only put a handful down, And then we got to kind of feed the other two cats elsewhere.
Well, it's probably good that you're doing that because, you know, no two cats have to eat the same amount of food to be able to maintain their ideal body weight. And by meal feeding your cats and having them be fed separately, you're going to be able to control how much food they're taking in. And it's very helpful, especially if you start getting kitties that are elderly and need to be on a therapeutic diet. That way you can feed the therapeutic diet to the cat that needs it and the other ones can have their regular food. So you're doing the right thing by meal feeding. People get into this, I want to just leave food down 24 hours a day for my cat. And that's one of the things that leads to, probably the big thing that leads to obesity is cats just going back and just gorging all the time on food.
Yeah.
And see, the other two cats we had before, we could leave the food down there, you know, without any issues, and they wouldn't gorge themselves to death.
Well, yeah. I kind of look at this as it's like me with a open candy dish sitting on the coffee table, you know. I am one, personally, that could not live with, you know, easy access to food like that. I have to make it more difficult for myself because if not, I would be, you know, again, just sitting down and eating that entire box of chocolates if I could. So, yep.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Can't have it in the house. Yeah.
Oh, no, not at all. Gene, good luck. Thank you for calling. Oh, man. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Lori in Wisconsin Rapids, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have two labs I rescued. My black one has been having seizures since June. I've tried all kinds of different dog food. She's on phenobarbital and Tramadol. And I just don't know what to do. She had a seizure a couple of days ago, and she couldn't walk.
Yeah. You know, this is the issue is if you can find the underlying cause for the dog's seizures, then, you know, you can go through the whole neurologic workup looking for brain tumors and metabolic diseases and so on. But for the majority of dogs, you're not going to find the reason. And it's important that if your dog is having more than 6 to 12 seizures a year, or they're, you know, interfering with your dog's life or coming in clusters where they're maybe having two or three in a day, or they last longer than just a couple of minutes, then medication is in order. What I'm concerned about, though, is one of the things that it's at the back of my brain there, but Tramadol, which is a common pain medication that we use for dogs, I think can worsen seizures. And I think it's contraindicated in dogs that are epileptic. So you may want...
I think you're right, because that's been bothering me, because with her not being able to use her back legs. Now, I was going to put her down this morning, but she's walking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that what you talk to your veterinarian about whether Tramadol would be whether it's absolutely necessary. There's other forms of pain medication that your dog could go on that all depends on whether their liver and kidneys are working all right. We use, you know, things like the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Sometimes we'll even use a drug called gabapentin or Neurontin in some of these dogs, and they do well on that. But it's so important whenever anyone takes their pet into the veterinarian, when you're choosing a drug, you have to know, let the veterinarian know exactly what your dog is on and make sure that they are looking up can these drugs be used together? And that even includes some of the nutraceuticals and herbal products and so on. So having that detailed list is really helpful. But I'd look into that Tramadol and say, maybe this is not the right drug for my dog to be on.
I know. I think I'm going to take her off it because, I mean, she's such a beautiful dog. I mean, she's happy. She would think of going potty in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she'll drag herself out the door before she's going to go and potty.
Oh, poor baby. Well, good luck.
Good luck. Thank you, Lori. And appreciate your call very much. And I want to give Jeanette a chance to join us as well. Jeanette's in La Crosse. Let's see if we can get her on. Hi, Jeanette. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have an almost 16-year-old little Yorkie, and this last time when she went in for her dental, they noticed some nodules growing on her larynx and back of her throat there that weren't there before, and they're considering that it might be something of, troubling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, she did a little needle biopsy, but she talked about doing a laser biopsy, and at her age, is it worth putting her through all that?
I'm surprised they didn't take a biopsy at the time that she was under anesthesia for dentistry. That would have been the perfect time to be able to, you know, take a little piece of tissue to see what that was. You know, I like to say that age isn't a disease. And there are some young dogs that are more of an anesthetic risk than a 16-year-old. So if your dog's heart is healthy, kidneys are healthy, your veterinarian uses good anesthetic management, then, you know, I would think that, you know, going in, this would probably be a fairly quick procedure. They may even be able to do it just with a very light plane of anesthesia and down and up very quickly. So you need to find out what these things are, especially if they're going to be causing your dog any respiratory distress, voice change, anything like that. You know, because if it is something that can be managed either with chemotherapy or something, you'd be kicking yourself that you didn't give your dog the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, Jeanette. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network as we talk your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. And lots of callers, lots of Facebook comments and questions. Here's one from Brandy on Facebook. Can you suggest a super quiet cordless clipper for a very shy, long-haired cat?
Oh, you know, we just bought one, a cordless one for the clinic, because it's so handy. You don't have to always have a plug, and you can move around the animal.
Yeah.
It's noisy as all get out.
Oh.
You know, and so I think, you know, what we made the assumption that, you know, they're going to be as quiet as the ones that we have that are the plug-in ones back in the medicine wards and so on. But try them out. I mean, I'm not a professional groomer, but I think that, you know, if you just start looking through these pet supply catalogs and actually, you know, maybe Google quiet pet clippers, you may be able to find one. But if you do, let me know, because it is very scary for a cat. And we'll go back and hunt up one of the ones that are corded and have to be plugged in for some of our cats, just because they seem to tolerate that quieter one a little bit better than our cordless one.
Nancy in Dubuque, Iowa. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a 16-year-old small Dalmatian mix, about 30 pounds. And she is very healthy except for a slight heart murmur, and she has really bad arthritis. She has been on tramadol and meloxicam for several years now. We also take her to an acupuncturist on a regular basis, and that does seem to help. She also gets a chondroitin glucosamine supplement with her food. And our vet has suggested we might look into using a stage 4 laser therapy on her. I was wondering if you know anything about that. How does it work? And
yeah, that is something that I know is kind of an up-and-coming modality for dealing with arthritis. I have never used it, but I know that that is something that some veterinarians are getting training in how to use it. And to be honest with you, how it works, I have no idea. Okay. But all I know is it doesn't cut tissue. It's unlike like laser surgery where you're actually, you know, coagulating blood vessels and cutting through tissue with it. So it works very differently. But we the surgeons where I work have actually come up with this little phrase called WEDS, WEDDS. And each one of those letters stands for something. W is weight. And it sounds like if your dog's small, 30 pounds. I don't know if that's a normal body condition for your dog or not.
We're actually having trouble keeping weight on her. We want her to be at 30 pounds. She keeps dropping.
Okay.
And then we keep feeding her more, and she's able to put a little bit more on.
All right. So she's a skinny senior. Yeah. You know, exercise is the E. And it's really important, even though she may hurt a little bit, to still every day get up and get using those muscles, because we want to have that good muscle support for those joints. And sometimes we even have to resort to going to a physical therapist. And we have one at the veterinary school. they seem to be popping up everywhere, where they have things like underwater treadmills that she can get in and have that, you know, that buoyancy, so that it's kind of like a human doing water aerobics, where you still are able to burn some calories, exercise those muscles, and it feels good. And a physical therapist would also be able to give you some suggestions for things at home to be able to do, whether it's, you know, using little steps or exercise balls and things like that. Very, very helpful to help maintain or actually build some of her muscle tissue. The other thing to consider when we look at the D's would be drugs. And it sounds like your dog is on a combination of medications that are very safe to use together. The other D stands for diet. And if your dog is healthy and does not need to be on any particular diet for its health, you may want to look into using one of the newer joint diets that are out there. There's two that are on the market right now, one by from Science Diet and the other one by Nestle Purina. The big thing is looking at, you know, when you start looking at these diets, they are very high in fatty acids. And some people just choose to add an additional fatty acid supplement to their pet's regime. And so that might be, again, something you can talk to your veterinarian about that would be a very safe addition to what you're already using. And then the S is the supplements that you're using. So you're doing almost everything, and I think the acupuncture is a great idea, but see if you can get hooked up with a physical therapist and add in a fatty acid supplement, and then I think hopefully that'll give your dog a little more comfort.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Nancy. Nick in Green Bay, hi to you.
Hey, I got actually two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, like, we actually had the urine of our cat that we got from the Humane Society down in Appleton because it got really vicious. So then we got this other cat, and they said that it had all its claws, but you check her pads, and there's no claws any place on her.
Huh.
I was wondering if that's usual. And my other question is, I got a 75-pound black lab that we put the food up in the kitchen for him, and the cat pushes him away and eats his food.
Yeah.
Any bad side effects from that? Because she kind of pretty much took over the house once we got her.
Yeah.
It wasn't my choice to get this cat. It's kind of funny because he walked past and back and forth to the main side to get this cat, and my daughter's like, I want that one. And we're like,
yeah,
that's kind of a fat cat, but
okay,
it's been awesome since we got it.
Well, it's possible that she had a 4-foot declaw done, but, you know, some cats are just, they keep their claws retracted, and they just never use them. So if you're just, like, flipping the feet over and looking at the pads, you may not find them. Sometimes you have to kind of push up on the pad to pop the little nail out of the sheath,
yeah,
to see if it's there. But it may be that she's already been declawed.
Yeah, she can't climb.
Okay, so she probably has been. Yeah, so Humane Society goofed, and that happens once in a while. Regarding eating dog food is the odd mouthful is probably not going to cause her any long-term health problems,
okay,
except add to her waistline. If she was only eating dog food, there's an amino acid that cats need that is called taurine, and the dogs are able to manufacture their own. Cats have to have it in, because they're obligate or strict carnivores, they have to have it in a pre-made form. And they either, you know, get it through eating meat or whatever, or, you know, it's part of their diet. And we know that they do require much higher levels than other pets. So if she would only eat dog food, she would eventually either, one, become blind, because the retina requires other high levels of taurine to keep it normal, functioning normally, or she would die of what's called dilated cardiomyopathy. The heart requires a lot of taurine as well. So, you may want to
be eating like a couple pieces, like as soon as we catch her, I kind of kick her out of there, but
yeah,
her appetite is just crazy. She eats constantly. Like, she eats more than I do. I'm a fat guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, we want to make sure that and that you substitute other things rather than food for attention. You know, play with her with things on, you know, toys on strings and wands. And again, it's probably just one of these cats that maybe was in a multi-cat household or maybe missed a few meals and just realizes that, hey, food's here, I'm going to keep eating. Yeah.
Yep.
So, but you can get her changed around, but you just have to make sure that you don't give in when she's meowing and bugging you for food. Instead, substitute play.
All the time.
Well, good luck with her.
Good luck. Thanks, Nick. Thank you for calling. Oh, boy. Bill in Milwaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I got just two short, I think they're going to be short questions about a cat I have who I think she, our vet thought she had some kind of a stroke or some kind of a, well, I guess a stroke. He said it's really not really common in cats, but he didn't really know what else to call it. She has a, she's about 14 years old. She has also has like a little heart problem, which maybe contributed to it. And we've got her on a this Wisconsin, local Wisconsin company standard process, some feline renal support, and some whole body support because she did have indications of just the beginning of a kidney condition. But she tends to have every once in a while, I guess I'd call them episodes, seizures, but they're not like grand mal seizures. Sometimes she just like almost like faints. She's not unconscious, but she like falls over.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that, you know, it's more scary to me than I think it is to her, because then she pops up in about 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And she's fine.
Yeah.
Or she seems fine. I mean, she can get around and stuff, but I'm wondering if there's something that could be done with that without extensive testing. And also, I wonder what you could tell me about enalapril for cats with heart problems and or kidney conditions.
Yeah. Well, you've asked a lot of questions here. And seizures can present in many, many forms. What most people think of when a pet has a seizure is that they may be, you know, down on their side, chomping, drooling everywhere, urinating, defecating, paddling their feet. But sometimes we will just see what we call focal seizures, where they may just get a head twitch or, you know, just lose consciousness very briefly, as your cat's doing. And it sounds like she's bouncing right back and back to normal again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you're right about maybe putting the heart disease and the seizure disorder together. She may have thrown a small blood clot to her brain. She's also an older cat that will sometimes see brain tumors. And, you know, so it really is going to depend on, you know, how far you want to go. You said you don't want to go through any extensive workup. I mean, you could go as far as having an MRI of her brain to look for something, to see if you could find an area that may be able to be operated on. But with all her other health issues, I'd be a little reluctant to say that that's what you should be doing.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to using enalapril, it is a drug that we will sometimes use for, you know, treating pets that are hypertensive. And so if you're finding that your cat, I don't know if your veterinarian's been monitoring blood pressure, but that's probably what it's used more for, is treating blood pressure problems. And then we'll sometimes use it in cats and dogs that are spilling a lot of protein through their kidneys as well. And so, again, it's not something that is just, you know, we'd give to every elderly cat. We would be only using it for certain medical problems. And so I'm not sure if your cat's on that at all or not. But depending on when these seizures, back to that topic again, how often they're occurring, whether it's interfering with their quality of life, you may want to talk to your veterinarian about using an anticonvulsant drug if her liver and so on is working fine and she's able to tolerate it. But again, because she's, you know, at home, she's safe, she's, you know, that doesn't sound like they're really serious. If they're coming fairly infrequently, you know, you have to weigh the side effects of medication against the, you know, effects of the seizure or seizures. And if they're mild, she may be able to just live with them and do fine.
Mm-hmm. There
I
we
wonder,
go.
Because she seems to do all right with it, but it's more concern for my welfare. Cause
right.
It's very disturbing. But like I said, she doesn't lose consciousness. Sometimes she twitches a little bit. Sometimes she just like falls over. And then I timed them because I looked in other, you know, different medical
mm-hmm.
books.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, you know, if you're more than like so many times a day and more than 4 or 5 minutes, but these are like, you know, like mostly like 25 to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're pretty mild. So, but just, you know, keep an eye, keep a seizure diary. And if they're increasing in frequency or severity, that would be the time to, you know, contact your veterinarian.
And good luck. Thanks a lot, Bill, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. You can also post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you there. If you got a photo of your pet, we'd love to see that, too. We have an email from Amanda. We adopted our Beagle Max in January of 2012. He occasionally starts to make a snorting sound through his nose, and it seems as it's difficult for him to breathe for 30 seconds to 2 minutes. After doing some research, we've been told that this is called reverse sneezing, and we've talked about this on the show.
And you know what? I don't have to imitate it anymore. I just go on the computer, pull up YouTube, and put in reverse sneezing, and you'll see all these dogs doing it. So I don't have to know how to make that sound anymore. But it is very common in beagles. We just had a dog in today that I gave a intranasal kennel cough vaccine to, and right afterwards started doing this snorting sound. What's happening is the soft palate, the back of the throat, is the roof of the mouth is getting caught up over the epiglottis or part of the voice box. And so once the dog swallows, everything gets flipped back into normal again. Why beagles are more prone to it, I have no idea. But it's just one of those things that if we do hear a dog reverse sneezing in our waiting room, dollar to donuts, it's a beagle. And I think it's just because they're constantly sniffing and they've got their head down. It may be something anatomical. But
probably not allergy related, or
very unlikely. I mean, if this has been a problem all the dog's life and it's not getting worse, then it's probably normal. But we do sometimes see dogs that will just suddenly start doing this, and it's like they'll have like 4 or 5 days where that's all they're doing is just like in and out of having these reverse sneezing episodes. And some of those dogs will actually have when we have a look at the back of their throat, which is usually done under anesthesia. Their palate, soft palate, may be swollen, and they may have to have a palate resection to be able to get them back to normal again. Mm. So sometimes there is a medical reason for it.
Okay, the Amanda, the emailer, wondered if it was in fact something where she could maybe Benadryl once a day would help.
Probably not
going to help.
Probably not. No.
Paula in Grafton. Hi.
Hello. I have a black lab that at 7 o'clock or right around 7 o'clock every night, he starts to get pacing and getting in your face. And, I mean, we've let him out. We've fed him something. We've done everything. But he just paces and breathes, pants, and, you know, tries to get petted. And it's every night.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm wondering if he doesn't have some cognitive decline. It's very common for dogs to get kind of like an Alzheimer's type thing. And in the human world, they call it sundowning. And I don't know why, but it seems to be like at the end of the day, we see a lot of this happen with dogs at night. And so they're just anticipating that, one, the lights may go off and his vision may not be great. His hearing may be poor. And now he doesn't have anything to kind of cue himself into because everybody's sleeping. And so, you know, the things that you're doing at 7 o'clock at night just may be like the prelude to him, you know, knowing that something bad's going to happen later on. A couple of things that you may want to consider trying. One would be using, there's a jacket type thing that dogs can wear. They call it the thunder shirt. There's a couple of others, companies that are out there that are selling these too. Some dogs do better with that. It just kind of gives them a sense of body awareness and it naturally calms them down. You may want to also put a DAP collar on them. DAP stands for dog appeasement pheromone. You can buy them over the counter. And again, just kind of a natural calmative, and that may work. I've had some dogs do very well on at dinner time getting a little bit of melatonin, and this would be something your veterinarian could come up with a dose for you. Again, it's one of those things that's available over the counter. People take it when they're traveling and so on to sleep a little bit better, and some dogs do well with that. I have, and in severe cases, actually pulled out some big guns like a benzodiazepine like Valium. Although that does sometimes make them a little bit more disoriented. And so it's something you would need to, you know, consider trying and just see if it makes a difference for your dog or not. And I've actually started my older bulldog, because he's showing some signs of cognition changes too, on a supplement that's called Nutrix. And it really seems to make a difference for him too. It's a jellyfish extract. And I, you know, he's just on it a couple times a day. He gets a pill in the morning, pill at night. And again, you can get that from your veterinarian. I don't think you can get it online yet, but you may check some of the online pharmacies if your vet doesn't carry it. So there's a number of things like that that you can try, and making sure that you're like leaving night lights on for him. It's just kind of some common sense things that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we have the lights on and he sleeps at the foot of our bed on his own bed. But it's just that every night at that time, he's just try some of those things and see
good.
How they work.
All right.
Thank you very
good luck.
Much.
Thank you for calling. Jess is calling on the road. Hi, Jess. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. First-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a truck driver on the road, and I'm wanting to get a pet. I'm wanting to get a dog, as a companion to go with me on the road. And I was wondering what kind do you think would be the best dog to get?
Well, I think that is like me trying to choose your spouse. Everybody has a different desire. They have different appearances and so on. Always do your homework before you get a dog. I was just actually talking with someone the other day who asked me, what does it cost at our clinic to spay a dog? And I told him, and he was like, oh my God, that is so expensive. And so before you even get a dog, be looking at, does your lifestyle really warrant having a dog with you? It's one we're looking at about, on average, about $20,000 during the dog's lifetime of expenses, more or less, depending on whether you have to board your dog. If you're looking at getting one, I would probably say don't get a puppy if you're not on a reliable schedule to be able to go to like dog training classes and things, because your dog's going to be out in public with you all the time. So you need to have a very well socialized dog, and traveling with a puppy and trying to house break it when you're on the road would be or truck break it, I guess you would say, would be really difficult as well. There's so many small breed dogs out there. Depends on whether you want to take them to the groomer, how much time you have for brushing and taking care of them that way. Whether you want, a dog that's more yappy, or quieter. I mean, like Schnauzers are known for not shedding, but being like probably one of the barkiest dogs around.
I've had dogs before, I'm not the best trainer in the world, but then again, I know how to train dogs in a nice way and get them to do things. But I'm basically just, because I see all kind of truck drivers with, real small dogs to, like yours, big bulldogs. Just all different kind of dogs, but I just didn't know if there was like one kind of dog would be better suited for traveling.
Yeah. No, I think it's a matter of bulldogs. I mean, they obviously can't handle heat, and depending on where you're driving, that's going to be a problem for them. I have to always say, look at the rescue groups and see if you can get one that needs a home rather than supporting the puppy business that is sometimes overpopulating the world with dogs.
Yeah, and sometimes those rescue dogs, you can get one that's trained and
ready to roll.
Yes, ready to roll.
Literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. That's what I was planning on doing, was going to the Humane Society where I live. I've visited different ones around the country, but I've just yet to make up my mind.
Yeah. Well, good luck. And like I said, it's like choosing a spouse. You're going to know as soon as you see that dog that is going to be the dog of your dreams.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest, professor of veterinary medicine at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net as we talk your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Great to have her along, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, or even a photo of your pet right there. And, of course, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Rebecca in Sun Prairie, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a seven-month-old puppy that I got from the shelter. She is, I believe, a golden retriever, Labrador, and possibly Chow mix. She's just been a fantastic dog. The problem that I have is she recently, over the last 3 weeks, has been first thing in the morning puking up just a little bit of, well, it seems like stomach bile or some type of substance. There's no food in it whatsoever. And I took her to the vet, and the vet said that she had a blockage in her intestines based on an x-ray that he viewed, and that she would pass it fairly quickly. Well, it's been 2 weeks now, and she hasn't passed anything. They put her on an anti-vomiting medication, which helped in the beginning, but that has run out, and now the vomiting has picked up again. And it's not every morning, but it seems to be every other morning.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if she has some type of nervous stomach or something. It's always in the morning.
Yeah.
And never any other time. And she's completely happy and, you know, is as energetic as ever and all that.
Well, I doubt that she would have a blockage. I mean, they would normally be not able to keep food down. You'd be seeing, you know, issues with only maybe liquid stool coming by. And the fact that she's so comfortable and happy, that kind of rules that out. There is a condition that is called bilious vomiting syndrome in dogs. And what it is, it's like us having acid reflux, except this is bile gets refluxed from the small intestine up into the stomach. One of the things that that I've tried, because I've had dogs that have done this as well, and it's usually early in the morning, depending on the position that they've been sleeping, going to bed with an empty tummy, they'll irp up this stuff, and then if you can get them to eat something, they're right back to being normal again. Try feeding your puppy some food right before bed. Save a little bit of her dinner so that just, you know, even if it's just a few dog biscuits or a handful of kibble, so that she's got something in her tummy at the time that she's sleeping. Also be looking at kind of positioning when how she's sleeping. If, you know, she can lay a little bit on an incline, kind of like they do with people. They tell you to put something under the front legs of your bed so you're on a slight incline. If you can get her, you know, dog bed or something propped up a little bit, it's kind of hard to force a dog to do that, but that may help too. There's some medications that can get used. There's one that's called metoclopramide or Reglan that just you give before bed, and it helps keep all the you know, everything going in the right direction. It's a prokinetic agent that will not allow the bile to reflux back up into the stomach. And I've had really good success with just feeding a dog at night and you know, just being really conscientious about doing that, and you'll probably get this thing solved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is it something she'll outgrow, or is it something she'll always have, you think?
It really depends on the dog. I mean, I used to have Basset Hounds, and one of them would do it all the time, and we just called it the irps, because I'd be waking up and I'd hear this dog next to my bed, you know, and I got really good at just leaning over and, you know, putting their head in a wastebasket so I didn't have to clean the carpet. But that's, you know, it's kind of a dog type thing. But make sure too that you've, you know, ruled out some of the more common things too, like does she have any intestinal parasites or anything like that? There is a particular parasite that lives in the stomach called Isoloptera that you can't pick up on a stool check. It's difficult to find, but it's very responsive to some of the common dewormers. And so for some of these dogs, especially young ones that are at that point in their life where, boy, this just started, I'd be looking at, you know, as part of my medical workup for them, is just going through a therapeutic deworming as well, and that may help too. So
okay.
All but, right. Yeah, do a little research on bilious vomiting syndrome in dogs. And,
yeah. All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. Susie in Springfield, Illinois. Thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions about my two rotten tabby cats.
Okay.
First of all, I've had cats all my life. When we lived in the country and in the city, and I never knew that cats had anal glands.
Oh, yeah.
I never knew that there were such things as anal glands until I married my husband, who came with chihuahuas, and apparently small dogs have to get them expressed.
And some cats as well. And some big dogs, you know. So it's one of those things where every animal is an individual and depends on the consistency of the material that's in there. And sometimes their diet and whether they're overweight. And so lots of variables that way.
I'm just glad I don't have them.
Yeah.
However, my two cats, Remus and Loki, both have to have their anal glands expressed. Remus actually scoots, and that's what alerted me to the issue to start with. So I took both of them in, and both of them have to have their anal glands done. Remus, because he's exhibiting the scooting behavior, led me to take him to the vet. And then Loki's material inside them was very thick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's something I could do with their diet to help. My sister feeds a raw food diet where she orders ground rabbit, quail, and duck, and then she mixes it with taurine or every, you know, few days. And she said that the scooting with one of her cats totally abated. But I've been considering something like Dr. Tom's, which is supposedly very close to natural diet, without having to go with the ground animal route.
Yeah, the only thing that I've seen and tried is increasing the fiber content in the diet so the stool is bulkier, which would put more pressure on the glands to allow them to be expressed. There are some pets, though, that are just plagued with their anal glands always being full, and surgical removal is something to consider as well. It's a fairly easy surgery to do. They do have to be on stool softeners for a few days afterwards, and depending on the age of your cats, that might be something to consider if you've got a lifetime of this to look forward to. It's a very common problem in older cats, and it seems that as cats get older, especially like, you know, we're talking elderly kitties, that secretion in the anal gland will become more pasty and more difficult for them to get out on their own when they have a BM. I have also taught owners how to express themselves at home. And although it's not a fun job because of cat's anatomy, unlike dogs, you can do it externally. You do not have to do a rectal exam on them. Cats don't see the humor in that. And it's actually fairly easy to do once you, you know, learn the technique. So that might be another route that way. When it comes to raw diets, though, I mean, I have to be frank with you. The AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, has a stand now that says that they should be avoided. And it's primarily for health reasons for people as well as for pets. And so, you know, is there a benefit? I mean, this, you're going to find all kinds of stuff on the web that this works, that works. You know, yeah, my aunt fed it and their pet did better. None of that has been substantiated at this point. So it's, you know, something that you may want to do a lot of research on and just make sure that you're being as safe as you can with having, you know, raw food in your house. I mean, just like you wouldn't leave raw chicken breasts out on the counter. You'd be, you know, using washable utensils and so on. It's the same thing with handling the raw diets for pets. We see E. coli and salmonella and all kinds of issues with it. And I doubt that it's going to have any effect on the anal glands.
I really actually don't want to go through everything she goes through with that. I'd rather feed them cat food.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that answer.
You're welcome.
My other quick question. How much of a risk is it to the pets, the Chihuahua and the two cats, to go to a vet for have their teeth cleaned who uses an older type of anesthesia versus the newest type of anesthesia?
Well, the reason why they've come out with some of the newer anesthesias is they're cleared from the body better. You can get by with lower doses. They're more, you can fine tune, you know, what you're doing. And so I'd be shopping around. I had someone in the other day that was taking their pet in every 6 months to have the teeth cleaned. And I'm looking in this mouth, and it was just 3 months ago that the dog had its teeth cleaned, and they were already tartar encrusted. The big things when you're getting a pet going, you know, for dentistry is asking the veterinarian how they clean the teeth. Do they ultrasonically scale the teeth? Do they polish the teeth after? Do they take x-rays, intraoral x-rays, to be able to look for bone loss and so on? Do they measure how deep the, you know, the pocket is around the tooth? You know, it's really, really important that if you're going to go through the dentistry that you do it right. And even talking about the anesthesia, making sure that they're on fluids, that they're being monitored very carefully, that they're intubated with an endotracheal tube. You know, so you need to be your pet's advocate and go in and ask those questions. And if they say, no, we just scrape the tartar off the teeth, then turn around and find another veterinarian to have that dentistry done.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, price sometimes is not worth the risk of
no,
because right. My friends and I love them.
Yes, that's right. Good luck.
And typically you pay, you get what you pay for.
You do. So. You do. Yep.
All right. Thank you again, Susie, for calling. Appreciate your call. We are visiting today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, and of course she is a professor of veterinary medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, and she's going to be with us today right up until 12:30, and we'll be back with her after we take this quick look at the news. Stay with us. If animals are an important part of your family, I bet you want to keep them healthy and happy, and that can be sometimes difficult. New information coming out all the time, lots of different opinions. It's hard to know what to do as a responsible pet owner. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Really happy to have Dr. Sandy Sawchuk with us from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. She's here for the next half hour to share new information and some timely advice for you. And whether you're a lifelong owner or can't imagine life without a cat or two or a dog around, I'm telling you right now, she's very happy to answer your questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page, post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back with Sandy after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, professor of veterinary medicine at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Lots of people online. That number is 1-800-642-1234. Got some Facebook questions at The Larry Mueller Show. You can go there if you have one, or if you have a photo you want to post of your cat or your dog, we'd love to see, or your pet, we'd love to see that as well. And email at talk@wpr.org. Viola in Shawano has been waiting a while, so let's go to Viola, Sandy. Viola, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually calling for my son. He has given a Gordon Setter that is 5 years old, and he's the third owner. And his daughter had it. They could not seem to get the dog house trained. So he took it, and he always takes it out. It will not go to the bathroom. It will not urinate while it is on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
And as we live in Shawano, you have to have your dogs leashed.
Yep. Yeah, and that's a problem, too. I mean, I adopted one of my bulldogs, and she had the same issue with only going off, you know, had to be off leash to be able to go to the bathroom. And it's just sometimes their preference. They need to be able to circle. They need to be able to sniff. Some dogs that have had issues with being punished for going to the bathroom in the house will associate owner plus elimination means I'm in trouble. Even if they're doing it in the right spot, they just know that you don't mix the two together with the owner being present. So sometimes some dogs like their privacy. The best advice I could give would be to, you know, have a fenced-in area for the dog to be able to go in, even if it's just putting up like one of those small dog kennels or something, so that the dog does have an area outside that they can go to. And making sure that, you know, the owner should be out there and immediately giving a reward once the animal has gone to the bathroom. And so, you know, I've never seen a dog hold it forever. They eventually have to go. So if fencing an area in isn't an option and you have to use a leash, then I would be just working on, you know, just talking very quietly, having some really good treats in your pocket, like some cooked chicken or, you know, freeze-dried liver or something wonderful, and just keep taking the dog out frequently. And when you can't be there to take it out, it's in a crate or it's confined, but just frequent trips outside, eventually it's going to go. And at that point, you hand the dog a treat. What a great dog you are. So that they start associating owner, and eliminating means good things are going to happen. And so it may just mean kind of going back to square one again. And this would be a great thing to do, like over a weekend, where you've got a couple of days where you can just devote yourself to taking that dog out like every half hour or so until it eventually goes. But then, you know, you have to watch it in the house and keep it confined so that it doesn't, you know, wander off into another room and eliminate in the house.
Yeah,
so,
there you go. Yeah. Good luck, Viola. Thank you. Joan in Three Lakes. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have recently adopted two adult cats, a male and a female. Female's about 10, the male's about 9.5. They seem to be doing well. The female's more of an alpha cat. But the other day, one of them, I don't know which, of course, urinated on the bed. So I don't know if this is possibly an isolated territorial thing or if it's something I'm going to have to continually watch.
Do you have other cats at home?
No, just these two.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a problem when you don't know which one has done it. And right. It's only a single episode. You know, ideally, you would have them both have a urine sample check to make sure that neither of them have any issues, health reasons that they would have urgency to have to, you know, use the bed. I would also be, you know, really evaluating your litter box management. If you've got litter box, you should have two cats. You should have three litter boxes in three separate locations in your home. Uncovered, preferably, soft, scoopable, sandy litter that you clean every day. And, you know, if the litter box is dirty or maybe in a location that the cat doesn't like or, you know, too close to the food or, you know, any number of those things, they may just think that, hey, this bedding's nice and absorbent. I'm just going to use this. So, you know, really work on making sure that you've provided them with the golden toilet, okay, as one of my colleagues calls it. Just like it's perfect and so that they really like it. If the bedroom is a spot that you can put a litter box in, I would strongly recommend that. It doesn't necessarily have to stay there forever, but by letting them have easy access to the litter box by having it near the bed, then you can gradually, you know, once it's being successfully used, gradually inch it out over, you know, every day an inch or two and get it out of the room and into the hallway and maybe into another spot. But yeah, I'd be really on the lookout for this happening again, and hopefully it won't if you make some mm-hmm. of those changes. But if it does happen again, they both need to go in and have urine samples checked.
Thanks, Joan, for calling. Robert, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a boxer that's 5.5 years old, and he, about 2.5 years ago, he was diagnosed with heart conditions there, and I guess the initials were SAS for it. I took him to a cardiologist, and he's been on Entenol for about 2.5 years. And when I take him out playing and stuff like that, he seems to pass out.
Oh, my goodness. What this SAS is, it's probably what they call subaortic stenosis. Mm-hmm. Boxers, I mean, that is a problem where the blood that's leaving the heart, there's an area that's constricted. So when, you know, he's just resting, he's probably able to pump enough blood around his body to be able to function. But when you really put that heart in overdrive, like exercise, he can't get enough blood out to supply his brain and so on. And so that's probably why he's passing out. It's also possible that at this point in his life, boxers also get what's called cardiomyopathy. It's a condition that affects the heart muscle, which makes the heart more difficult to pump the blood around the body as well. And you know, I'm not sure. This would be something I would definitely recommend that you go back to your veterinarian or to a veterinary cardiologist. Probably your dog needs to be re-echoed, having an echocardiogram done just to see, you know, compare it to what it was before. There, depending on the severity of the problem, sometimes there's some surgery that you might be able to do where, you know, it's again, I'd have to leave that up to my cardiology colleagues, but yeah, medical management, you know, may be helpful as well to maybe allow the heart to, you know, pump a little more effectively. But again, I think if it's been a while since you've been in, time to go back in again and get this looked at.
Yes. Well, I mean, it was about a year and a half ago when we went to the cardiologist.
It's time to go back in again. Usually most of my heart patients that I see, they visit with our cardiology staff, even if they're doing well, at least annually to have their heart checked again.
No, there you go. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Marty in Schulzberg. Hi.
Hi. We had a cat that was like 15 years old, and she developed a lot of problems with fur balls and being constipated. And I had read somewhere about adding extra fiber to their diet. And I was making a pumpkin pie, and she was standing there begging, so I just gave her some of the canned pumpkin, and she ate it. And she liked it so well, and then the next day she didn't have a fur ball, so I thought, well, maybe it was the canned pumpkin. And so I started giving her a spoonful of the canned pumpkin every day. And that took care of her fur balls and her constipation.
Wonderful. And, you know, what that's doing is adding a little bit of extra moisture. And it's also adding a little bit of fiber as well. Constipation is one of those common problems in older cats. And it's usually related to two things. Either they have something that's affecting their water balance, like diabetes or kidney disease, where they may be kind of subclinically dehydrated, and that's going to make the stool a little bit drier. The other reason is just they have poor anal tone or colonic tone, and so everything just kind of sits there too. But pumpkin is one of those things that we always recommend. It's cheap. You can, I tell people, buy a can of it, dump it all into like an ice cube tray, and then freeze like little individual daily portions that you can just pull out of the freezer and thaw out. Why cats will eat pumpkin, I have no idea, but it's one of those things where many cats like it. It's not going to hurt them, and if
good
it's helped
them.
Your cat, that's great. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Thanks, Marty.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Well, talking about interesting things to feed your cat, you had an interesting item about beer.
Oh, my
for
goodness.
Canines.
I could not believe this. But, you know, my dog turned 10 last month, and unfortunately, I was unable to hold his birthday party. But I was doing a little research to say, hey, let's, you know, have something unique. It's called Bowser Beer, and it's not really beer, but it's in a bottle that looks like beer, and you can get their own, like, your own dog's picture put on the label and so on. But it's a meat broth and malt barley mix. You know, a lot of dogs like to try to steal our beer, and that's not safe for them. So this is a way that if you're enjoying your, you know, your brew on a hot summer day, you could give your dog a bottle of Bowser beer. Yeah.
Sherry in Wausau. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 11 and a half year old female dog with diabetes, and she got diabetes about 8 months ago. Very difficult to regulate her diabetes. I feel I've become an expert. I've had her to her regular vet and also to emergency vets. She crashed one time, and I'm just looking for a place to look for expert information on diabetes so I can do some more research or take her to an expert. Try and figure it out and regulate it.
Well, I can tell you for cats, there's a wonderful site called Binky's Page, and named after a cat named Binky that's diabetic. But you know what? I am drawing a blank on where to go for dogs. I think that, you know, a couple of places I would look. I know UC Davis has a lot of good information online, and you may want to go there and have a look and just see what one of the universities is publishing. And Boy, I this will be something I'll have to look into, and I promise you, next show I will bring I'll peruse some websites and get back to you on this, because it's not something I've looked up and don't have it at the tip of my tongue right now.
So. Great, yeah, it seems like I've just tried to look into everywhere I can, and there's, you know, and tried a lot of things, and she's happy, she's good, but she's still not regulated with her blood sugar. So I'd like to check that out more so she doesn't develop other problems.
That's you know, and this is, it's one of the big reasons why, you know, trying to prevent diabetes by, especially for cats, not letting them get overweight. Same for dogs as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that's strongly linked to obesity, but there's other reasons why it can happen too. So, but it is a hands-on. Really, you have to have a dedicated owner, and it sounds like you are. But I'm sorry I don't have the information right now, but I will get it for you.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Just looking at our Facebook page here, Buzz has a great picture of their five-month-old Golden. That was taken at Christmas time.
Oh, my goodness.
A pretty one. And
Portuguese water
Christy
dog.
Oh, my goodness. Aren't they pretty?
Dogs. They're beautiful dogs. And they come in, like, different coat styles. You can get, like, the curly, and then there's a different, you know, a different coat colors and so on. And they're beautiful dogs.
And she says, she said this is a 10-month-old. She went into heat early December. I kept a real close eye on her and feel almost positive she's not pregnant, but her teats are still fairly swollen. Could this be a false pregnancy?
Yes, most likely. And that's, you know, one of the downsides is, you know, we never know when a dog's going to have their first teat cycle. And, you know, you can, some dogs it's a year and a half, or sometimes it's even earlier than 10 months. So, but it's very common with the hormonal changes that dogs go through. They all will have these hormonal changes, but some dogs have more physical signs of it where they may start lactating, they may start adopting toys and wads of socks and different things and make little beds for these things and you know, treat them like babies. Some dogs can even have a personality change and sometimes be a little more aggressive or protective. And, you know, I'd say if she's not going to be used as a breeding dog, get her spayed as soon as she's able to have that done.
Bevan Rhinelander, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. I have a 9-year-old German short hair who at least once, sometimes twice a week in the morning, has a real gurgly intestine sound. When I go to feed her, she turns up her nose at the food when that occurs, and she wants to go out and self-medicate on grass.
Yeah, it's this is very similar to the problem that an earlier caller had, where her dog would, you know, get up early in the morning and vomit up this kind of bile-y stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, always make sure your dog's physically normal, getting them in to the vet to make sure that everything's happy and healthy. But I would, try feeding her a little bit of food before you go to bed and see if that doesn't do the trick. And I, like I said before, my bassets used to do this, and they would turn up their nose and try to eat my houseplants. They'd turn up their nose to their food and so on. And I actually would just take some plain yogurt in a turkey baster. You know, I would just suck some up, and I would squirt a little bit in. It's just a matter of getting them to swallow something. They would turn around very, very quickly from having this be an issue for them. So feeding her before night, or finding something super palatable that you can just get her to, you know, take a lick of or something before you give her breakfast, that may help too.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Barb in Washburn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good day. Hi. I have two kitty questions.
Okay.
Recently, 5 days ago, I adopted what I was told was a shy adult ragdoll kitty. And very shy indeed. I haven't seen much of her in 5 days. She's hiding and very good at it. Sometimes I know where she is, and I'm wondering, is it a good approach to, after all this time, go to her and kind of introduce myself, kind of
No.
Pick her up, hold her, pet her, or should I leave her?
Let her be the one to come to you, okay? And that's probably if you try to approach her, reach for her, touch her, that's just going to scare her. So take your paperback book in or whatever, sit in, just sit quietly in a chair in the room that she's in. Kind of do the, turn your back, ignore her, have some really good treats that you can kind of toss in her direction. And hopefully she'll come around. The critical socialization time for cats is up until about 7 weeks of age. They need lots of human contact and gentle handling. If they don't get that, sometimes this is like the way they are for the rest of their life. And you may just need to accept the fact that you've got this presence in your house that you don't have a lot to do with. A couple of months ago, I adopted, several years ago, I adopted a cat that was just like this. Actually, the first couple of months she lived in she would push and jump up and get into the drop ceiling in my basement. And it was really hard. I mean, she just never wanted to have anybody near her. For whatever reason, all of a sudden she's turned into a pest. She wants to be on my lap. She's bugging me. She's trying to push against my cup of tea in the morning. Aww. And what changed? 10 years I've had her. And all of a sudden she's now this friendly, friendly cat. And yet I still can't grab her. I can't hold her. Everything's got to be on her terms. So that's...
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I can live with a shy kitty.
Yeah.
The other question is about... a feral cat. I believe it's a feral cat. I've seen her furtively dart across the yard and has come onto the deck in the evening. And I've put some food out for her just because I feel so bad in this cold weather. Is that a good thing to do, to feed a cat and, out of compassion? Or should you just let them fend for themselves?
That feeding them, I mean, it's really a complicated story with feral cats. I think that if you don't feed them, then you're going to probably have more predation on birds and so on, which are, at feeders in the area and really, at risk of being caught. But if you, if you do feed them, then you run the risk of having them be, able to be hardier and maybe reproduce. And so it's kind of a catch-22. What I would recommend is either contacting your local animal control officer or Humane Society, look into getting a live trap and see if you can put some food in there and trap her and then get her into appropriate care, whether it be at a shelter or like in the Madison area, we have Friends of Ferals that will work with feral cats and get them adopted or put in situations where they out to a farm or something where they can, have shelter and food and so on. So it's, good of you to do that, but I would put it in a live trap and see if you can get her caught.
All right. There you
go.
Good
point. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. Facebook question from Michael, wondering if you have ever heard of using fabric softener when washing your dog to help control shedding.
I would not. Okay, that's going to have oils and perfumes and so on that can be very irritating to the skin. They do make different conditioners and so on, but all dogs shed, and it's just part of having a dog. And if you don't want fur around your house, make sure that you get a non-shedding breed that you take to the groomer all the time. So,
What about a Shar Pei who loves eating grass and then's now gotten into bark and dirt? He will go up to a maple tree and peel a piece of bark off.
And he may just like a little salad now and then, or a little roughage in his diet. Some dogs just happen to like to chew on stuff like that. And if there's nothing wrong medically and the dog is feeling good and no tummy upsets, no intestinal parasites, it may be just absolutely normal behavior. But really be careful with bark. Like if they make things like that cocoa bean mulch bark, that's very toxic for dogs. So if you've got a dog that likes to sample things in your yard, make sure you put in the correct plants and decorative materials.
And Sandy, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
You are back on Tuesday, February 12th,
I am.
And I look forward to it.
All right.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the UW-Madison School of Vet Medicine. She'll be back on February 12th, and we'll do it again. Tomorrow, Chad McGrath joins us to talk about cross-country skiing, then Gary Engberg with us to visit about ice fishing. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.